Today on 9Wax Radio, the story of garage therapy.
Brought to you by 9Works.co.uk, the fastest growing online Porsche community, supported by the 9Works Marketplace. 9Works Radio is your dedicated Porsche and car podcast, hosted by Lee Sibley, Andy Brooks, and Max Newman. 9Works Radio is carefully produced with special input from experts around the industry and powered by our valued members of the 9Works Driven Not Hidden Collective.
Andy, Max, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Chipper. Chipper as you like. The sun is shining.
You're very chipper.
The cars are resplendent. We've got an excellent guest on who's a top bloke as well. What could possibly be wrong about that?
I think maybe just you haven't had enough sleep.
maybe a little bit of that.
I think you're delirious.
Deliriousness with happiness. So, anything new for you boys in the Porsche world so far? Andy, your car has been sold, we think, but not at the time of recording.
Well, we don't know.
I'm so surprised you've gone down that CC route, if I may say so. I'd like to know your kind of thoughts on why you did it.
Why am I doing it? It's exposure in the European and American market, I think. Because I feel it's, being left-hand drive, it probably hasn't got the desirability in the UK as much as it could have. So I wanted to open it out to the world, as it were.
You want to go big in America?
Yeah, it'd be quite cool, wouldn't it, to see it go to America? I'd really like that.
In America.
I'd love that. It'd be pretty cool to see that cruising around the streets.
Only because you want to drive it when you go to Red Sport Reunion. You just want someone to garage it for 3 months or whatever it is.
That's the whole plan.
Excellent. Max, how's Boxster life? I assume you've been banging that roof down for every mile you can muster in the last month or so.
Boxster life is good. Yeah, I'm a very, very happy Boxster owner. Yeah, I've got to say, it's a real treat. Every time I go in it, very, very happy. I'll tell you what, I'm so happy with it that I was looking at, because it's rhodium silver, it hides its, road rash and everything really, really well. But it has got, like all Porsches do, it's got, the sort of gravel rash on the nose and the leading edge of the bonnet. And also, which must be a Boxster thing, where the scoops are, the engine scoops on the side, there's just a bit of rash there. And I like the car so much that I thought, well, maybe at one point I'll get this painted, which is unheard of. I've never bothered having a car painted ever in my life. But I thought, well, maybe I should. You talk, Lee, about would you put a pair of tyres on a car or a set of tyres on a car, and that's a good litmus test for how much you like a car. I'm thinking, shall I get this bloody thing painted?
That's big, isn't it?
That's serious.
As in all over?
Well,
yeah, different colour.
I was thinking maybe not all over, but then I thought, because I'm not going to paint the roof, if I did that, the front bit and those things, maybe it would end up being all over. I don't know.
Interesting. Cool. Yeah, you're that attached to it already.
Well, I mean, that's maybe somewhere down the line. But I tell you what, they could be coming there. There could be a wheel reverb coming.
That's always worth doing.
I was going to say, with the paint, you're either it's getting under your skin or you've had a whack. and then now you're talking about wheel refurb. So you've
had a whack. I haven't had a whack, but the wheels, I mean, it's got some horrible manky old wheel weights on it, and it's got, the paint's coming away a little bit on some of the spokes and that kind of thing. So my 997, I wish I'd had those wheels refurbed sooner, because I got them powder coated just back to standard, and it lifted the whole car so much. So I was looking at these, and I'll tell you what I saw. I saw a picture of a 986 Boxster Special Edition. I think it was the RS 550 edition.
They're cool.
That had that really nice, I think, that super lightweight five-spoke wheel. And the centres were just a slightly darker grey, or the spokes and the centres slightly darker grey, but the rims were silver. And it looked really good. And I thought, God, I wonder what that would look like on my car, maybe.
Photoshop, get it photoshopped.
So that's a thought.
Max. It's worth it. I always find that with refurbs. They make a big difference to how the car feels and how easy it is to clean as well.
Yeah.
Which obviously we're going to come on to later with our guest.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's a thought. But on the subject of clean cars, the thing that I'm most excited about at the moment in the car world is my OEM Audi mats have been delivered for the A1 today.
Oh, so, calm down. You're living too fast, Max.
I get so excited about OEM mats. I love the way they fit. So I can't wait for Mandy to get home. And I'm going to put these. I've got the full set boot, rear footwells, front footwells, got little A1 logos on them. Really excited to get them in.
Did you go full OEM or did you get?
Yeah, full OEM.
From Audi.
Yeah. No messing around.
Yeah, none of those.
I'm all in.
Good work. Nice. Have you taken the plastic covers off yet?
I've taken the plastic covers off. So I could have a look.
Have you felt the weave?
Well, no, they're rubber.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez. Well, I'm not sure about that.
I got teenagers, Mandy. It's the best way. Okay. Protection. Rubber protection.
You talk about teenagers and floor mats. I've got a naughty story that I'm going to quickly dive away from another time, but it involved purchasing some what I thought were Ed Hardy car mats for my Volkswagen Polo. It's my first car, but we're going to move on really quickly anyway, because I don't want to talk about it. But yeah, it's really bad. It's as bad as it sounds.
Those tattoo things?
They were about 60 quid, I think. Yeah, they definitely weren't.
I'm totally uneducated on what you are talking about. I've got no idea. Is that a good thing that they know?
Ignorance is truly bliss, I would say. Okay, ignorance is truly bliss.
I'm good. I'm quite happy to not know then. What the hell are you talking about?
I know what you're talking about because Lily's got some Ed Hardy ridiculous trousers that she wears.
Yeah, right.
They're in fashion. It's in fashion.
Oh, they're back in.
Yeah.
They were best part of 15, 20 years ago when I was trying my hardest to rock them. So. Yeah. Anyway, massive digression. I want to get back on point for this episode, if you don't mind, Jez, because we've got somebody chomping at the bit to talk to us, and we're just excited to talk to him. So, please welcome to Timeworks Radio, Maz from Gouge Therapy.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
How are you, good sir? Thank you for joining us. As I say, how's tricks in the detailing world?
Very good, thank you. Yeah, incredibly busy. Lots of changes this year for Gouge Therapy and myself. All in all, very happy.
Good. So I'm hoping listeners would have also seen on Nineworks TV, you and I have started a little bit of a detailing diary via YouTube, where we're taking little bits and pieces of my car, Little Irish, although that's just kind of serendipitously so far. We can use any car we like. And just picking up different parts of the car and how a little bit of work can make a hell of a lot of difference. And I said on those videos, for the benefit of those who haven't yet seen it on YouTube or Nineworks TV, I'll say it now. Maz, prior to meeting you and getting involved with Gouge Therapy, understanding the philosophy, which we're going to talk about in this episode, I never appreciated the benefits to cleaning and detailing a car. In fact, I really disliked the whole concept of it. I felt it was a chore and everything else. But again, you very kindly sent me some product, well, it was a load of products, in fact, and said, get stuck into these. And I've given it a jolly good go. And a couple of weeks ago, just before Norway, obviously took my dad, tipped up to his house in Essex, and he's not usually forthcoming with a compliment. And obviously he's seen my car for years. And he said, bloody hell, Lee, that doesn't half look good. I was like, really? And he said, that really does pop that paintwork. And I thought, well, do you know what? There we go. Because about 3 months in, it's a bit like going to the gym. You know, no one notices for the first couple of months. Yeah. And then people start going, you got guns, brother. I feel like I'm at that stage. Do you know what I mean? Not with the gym, by the way, but with the car. So fully invested in it. And that is absolutely all down to you, mate.
Thank you very much. Well, that's what we ultimately try and do with buying our the customer. And I guess I'll go into that as we talk in terms of our philosophy. But that's the test, isn't it? Is when other people have a look at, you know, your pride and joy, and if they can notice that it's slightly better in any way, you know, that makes you feel good. You
know, definitely. It makes
us feel good as well because, you know, the products work.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. And I, you know, I know, Andy, you'll share that concept, because what amazed me is before we, or at our weekend, we did up in Sheffield where we had the Cars and Coffee at Porsche Centre Sheffield. And then the next day we were at, where were we now? I can't remember.
EB Motorsport.
EB Motorsport. Of course we were. Of course we were. But on the Saturday, so obviously we'd got up, making our way over to Porsche Sheffield. And then about a mile down the road, you pulled into a garage and you'd brought like your own buckets with you and everything to give the car a spruce.
You laughed.
I laughed. And I was just like, what? we're miles from home. I wouldn't worry about it. But you're like, no. I'm going to clean my car. And you did. And as you started, I realized that I need to get in on that hype as well, because your 993 at the time was looking resplendent already. So I know you really care about how your car is presented, not just in the eyes of other people, but in the eyes of yourself.
Yeah. Well, I've only got into it in the last couple, 2 or 3 years, really. I was the same as you. As soon as I touched the car, I'd scratch it rather than clean it. And I've just learned processes and, yeah, it's just easy to do it now. So, you know, we cracked it out in 10 minutes. We cleaned two cars, didn't we, on that morning with a bucket and a bit of a jet wash, and they looked great compared to what they looked like before. So, yeah, absolutely. I'm down with the cleaning thing.
Down with it. Yeah, all the better for it. So I'm kind of hoping that if you're into it, you'll learn a little bit this episode, certainly about garage therapy and the ethos. And also, if you're not into it, you might have a look at what's on the other side. Maybe a journey that I've gone on recently, and maybe Andy a little bit beforehand. Max, where do you stand with car cleaning?
He pays. Gets a man in.
I'm a bit of a Luddite, but I have been watching with interest on your journey, because I have thought, you know, previously when Ryan was at Lava and he was looking after the car for me, and, you know, now Charlie from CW Car Care, and I really like that, and it's really helpful to have those guys involved. But I do think in between those times, I do think, you know, I should be doing a bit of maintenance wash work myself. But, you know, I haven't even got any buckets, let alone any product. So it's like a real sort of square one kind of thing. But that's a bit like you were, Lee. So I've watched what you've been doing, and I'm thinking, gosh, should I be getting on that journey and sort of learning from you and following you along?
Yeah, don't follow me at all. But like, you could be inspired by it, because I'm adamant if you could have like a GoPro, maybe I should do it one day for a laugh and just share it with the works members on the collective, but do like a time lapse of cleaning the car, because there's a lot of swearing where I'm tripping over myself. Well,
hopefully at the end of the journey, we can change that.
Well, Maz, the first day I tipped up to yours, and I still need to buy them. Like, of all the bits and pieces that you show me, I mean, there are so many bits that like save time, keep things neat, everything else, kind of little hacks in the detailing process. The thing I absolutely loved the most was that little kind of, looks like a little chock that you put under each wheel in the corner. And it's like a little roller, so that every time your hose pipe, if you're walking around a car and the hose pipe kind of cuts under the wheel, it usually gets stuck. And mine does all the time. Then I trip over it and swear a lot. But that, the hose pipe just rubs against the roller and stops it from getting stuck. Amazing, amazing bit of kit. Like, my mind was blown early doors. So you're always going to win me over, Matt. Do you know what I mean?
We didn't invent those, but they are essential, really, especially if you get frustrated.
Without a doubt. Yeah, I still need to get some. Maz, before we dive into the nitty-gritty, no pun intended, could you please explain why it's beneficial for people to keep their cars clean, Porsche or otherwise?
I think it's important to keep your car clean because it will retain its value better as the years roll on the car, and as obviously cars naturally devalue over time. Certainly most cars, and we've all been there, whereby if you look at a car that's 3 or 4 years old, that's been very well washed and maintained, versus a car that hasn't really been washed and maintained, there can be a massive difference in the way the car presents. So you'll see that, you know, if you go to a dealership and you may look at one car and you may think, okay, well, the wheels are curbed, or they've got lots of pitting in the alloy wheels, and there's loads of stone chips on the front, and there's loads of scratches all over the bonnet. Well, if you took a little bit more care with the car and use the right processes and tools, you could mitigate some of those bad, you know, sections of the car that haven't been well maintained.
I've got to be honest, that's something that I haven't really done until this year. And obviously I turned up to yours and you had a good look at it, pointing out a few defects and stuff. And it did really make me think, because in my mind's eye, at least, I was like, it's 4-year-old paint or 5 years, whatever it is now. It's box fresh. But where I've not looked after that car quite as much as perhaps I should have done, I've just been intent on driving it, which there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah,
to add a little bit more, I say depth, I guess, to my answer is, cars are very sensitive bits of kit, and the paint on the cars, especially as the paint has gone from a single stage paint to a two stage paint, where you've got the base coat, the color coats, and then the clear coat on top. Those paints have been getting thinner and thinner as the years goes on, because the manufacturers, when they were painting the cars and prepping the cars, they were finding that process was incredibly expensive, and it took a long time for the paint to cure. So they needed to put the cars in effectively like an oven, to lack of a better word, to cure the paint. Now, what happened is in the paint technology, they moved to a more water-based clear coat where it would dry a lot quicker. And they found that they could also then put a little bit less paint on the car, and the car was still dry and it still looked great. And what that's done is that's caused the lacquers to get thinner and thinner over the years, as time goes on. So if you don't look after the cars with a little bit more due diligence, you can find that, you know, you'll damage them a lot easier than potentially what they would have in the past. And there'll be less room for a detailer to be able to correct those defects in the future.
Yeah. We're seeing a lot of cars going straight from the factory to detailers. Why is that?
Well, as with any business, there's money and efficiency comes into the equation. So the factories, ideally what they'd want to do is paint a car and not touch it, because the more time they spend on correcting defects on the car, the more expensive that is. Now, every single car that comes from a factory typically has some preparation done at the factory and post the build of the car to correct defects that they find. They might find like a little dust nib in the paint where they have to sand that off and polish it back. So when a vehicle comes from the factory, it comes with defects generally. Some manufacturers are better than others in that respect. I mean, for example, PTS cars, they will come with a hell of a lot more defects than non-PTS cars.
Oh, wow.
And one, because it's not the same paint system that they're using. So I'm not sure if this information is current, but a lot of them were painted by a human being rather than the machines as well. And because it's being painted by a human being, you're going to have variation from car to car, and they're going to make mistakes. You know, they may spray one section a bit longer than they sprayed another section, and therefore it will look different. So therefore it will require more work for them to correct that. So cars, unfortunately, when they come from the factory, they're not perfect. They may look great, but when you get an inspection light and you have a look at the paint more carefully, you will find sanding marks, dust nibs, and other dealer defects that they put in. Because you've got to think as well, is you've got the build of the car, the factory technicians working on the car, then you have the transport of the vehicle, and then depending on if it's been transported by rail, or if it's been sitting in a yard for a long time, or if it's gone by sea, the car is then going to pick up different types of contaminants depending on how it's been transported. Then you have the dealerships prepping the car ready for the new customer, or for it to sit on the forecourt. And throughout those stages, the car picks up various defects, and that's due to effectively training. The people that prep the cars aren't necessarily detailers. Not to say that detailers in themselves is the answer, but there's limits to how much time they want to spend in prepping a car.
Yeah, which is obviously to the benefit of you guys in the detailing industry, because you refine them and make them even better then, I suppose. The industry itself has really, it's been around for a number of years, but in the last few years, it's really kind of blossomed and bloomed, and there's a lot of enterprises springing up now. It'd be great, I think, from the outset to just underline why you guys at Garage Therapy are different, and this is in with particular reference to your like approved or partner scheme.
Yes. So I guess I'll start with the story of Garage Therapy, because then I can link in the various segments to your question. So Garage Therapy started in 2019. That was when the company was formed. However, we actually started formulating our products the year before, because when Roger is my business partner, and you've met him, Lee, and Max and Andy, when we were discussing the concept of Garage Therapy, we quickly we quickly realized that we didn't want to make chemicals that were already existed in the market. Now, there's a caveat to that. What I mean by that is that it's you can go to a chemical blender, you can say to them, I want a shampoo, please give me this cherry scent and this level of concentration, and they'll give that to you, and hey presto, you have a shampoo. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to have complete end-to-end control as to how that shampoo was formulated, what the quality of the raw ingredients in there, the perform, and that it matched the performance characteristics we were after. So for us to be able to do that, that means we needed chemists. Now, during my corporate life, I made a lot of friends and acquaintances, and I had a very good friend of mine who worked for a large raw material manufacturer. And I approached him and I said, look, I need chemists to do, create shampoos, create coatings, create various other different types of chemicals. And that enabled us to, create solutions to problems from the ground up that currently haven't existed, or our take on the product hadn't existed in the market already. So our ethos was effectively product excellence from the beginning. And with Roger and I coming from different industries, so I was in IT for 20 years, Roger has been a structural engineer for a similar amount of time. We brought three core values with us, and that's performance, quality, and value. And those three tenets can mean lots of different things in that space. So the whole company is geared around creating a product that's grade A performance. We always aim to try and make the best product we possibly can, and we benchmark heavily to ensure that's the case. Quality, we don't use any cheap chemicals in our products, and we ensure that all of the products aren't ready to use, as in, if we can make them concentrated and give flexibility to the user to dilute the products to make them versatile and cost effective, then we'll do that. And value can mean lots of different things. You touched upon your user experience. Now, to some people, that's really good value, because if they enjoy using the product, then it's worth them spending, let's say, the £10 for the shampoo, because it smells great, it performs great, and they really enjoy it. And they think that that combination of performance and quality gives them the value that they're looking for in the end. So the whole ethos is very much fixated around those three tenets. And a bit like Porsche, we try and iterate on the previous version. So we don't just release a new product and call it a new name, it's a slight tweak on the old product. What we'll do is we'll make a version 2 or 3 or 4 of a product, and we'll constantly improve it. And sitting in a similar ethos to how Porsche have done with their 911s and other models.
It's really interesting, Maz. I didn't know that about your background. What was the catalyst for the two of you then, from those different backgrounds? What was the catalyst in 2019 that made the two of you think, actually, we're going to do this? You know, because that's quite a big leap, I imagine. Yeah. You know, different kind of business.
Yeah. So in 2000, so I met Roger in 2005, 2006, and we had the same car. We both had Seat Leons, and we met through a local car club, and as an extension of what we were doing with our cars in terms of modifying and driving them and looking after them, we were really into cleaning our cars, and you know, he would come round mine on a Saturday, or I'll go around his, and we'll, you know, polish the cars up and make them look great. Then we'll go to a car show, or we'll go for a drive, or whatever we were doing. And that passion got us into professional detailing, because once Roger's very similar to me in the sense that once I get into something, I want to try and be the best I can in that field. And I already knew what I was doing cleaning cars, but I just took it to the next level, and I've done a lot of research, and I got practice bonnets. I bought machine polishers, and you name it, I done it. And
practice bonnets, that's another level, isn't it?
Well, the only way you can get better at something is if you take things to the extreme. So,
absolutely, you know, yeah.
To become good at sanding, you have to practice on something. I didn't quite fancy practicing on my own car to become good at wet sanding, but it's us going into professional detailing in 2008 and detailing other people's cars back then effectively brought us into the industry, and then fast forward 10 years later, we sort of took a break from it around 2014, but in 2018 Roger got a new car, and he said, oh, you know, should we start detailing again? And by that point I've had kids, and I, you know, I was doing very well in my corporate IT career, and I said, well, no, but I'll start a company with you, and we'll see where that takes us. And here we are.
Wow,
absolutely epic. So it's, I mean, I knew of this idea or reality or existence is the word. I knew of this existence of basically a warehouse whereby lots of different brands, you could just specify your ingredients and slap a label on it, and there you go, there's your brand.
I don't even think you can really specify your ingredients. I mean, Gary Shurupi, so we've got our own chemists. I say our own chemists, so we have very sophisticated contracts with chemists in we have three lots of chemists, some in the UK and some around Europe. And we're very particular into how we want to develop and manage that full end-to-end process of the chemicals. If you go to a blender, it's their IP at the end of the day. And for me, that wasn't acceptable. You know, the Gary Shurupi, Roger and I, we needed to own that IP and be in full control of how the products are formulated and designed, tested.
I imagine, Maz, it's quite similar to, you know, when specialists, like Porsche specialists, they, you know, they're outsourcing different bits and pieces to different businesses. You know, there are many variables created in that regard. Like, obviously there's a risk in bringing things in-house from like an investment point of view. Of course there is, but it ensures continuity. It ensures consistency of quality as well. You're able to keep an eye on things a bit more. And surely like that's a big win for you, I would imagine.
Yeah. If we took the decision early on that we weren't going to, one, we didn't have the investment to have our own facilities on site to manufacture. But two, when I looked at various other industries, a lot of companies, and if we take Porsche as an example, they don't create everything themselves. So they might get a differential from Quaife. You know, their turbos might be BorgWarner. Their fittings will be from another German manufacturer. And they glue all of that stuff together. They create it to make, you know, the package that we see today. And obviously, they make their own stuff as well. And so do we. But I thought, how are we going to bring the best of breed in terms of skills and expertise to Garage Therapy? Because if I hire my own chemist and I bring them to Essex, like a chef, the chef might only be good at creating desserts. Well, I want a chef that's really good at cooking steak. So then you have to bring in another chef, another chemist, in that's really good at doing other sections, and we quickly realized that for us to be able to get that expertise, that we needed to have a different operating model to just having chemists in house, because just having chemists in house doesn't create a brilliant brand or the best product.
Yeah.
I suppose to a point as well, Maz, you need to offset the desire for excellence and bringing things in house with the commercial viability of the thing as well. Because you have to create products at a price that people can afford and will buy them, as well as being at the very front line in terms of quality.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's always a consideration. And for us at Garage Therapy, if you look at our P&L and how our expenditure is cut and sliced, a lot of it goes to research and development and testing and QA over and above, let's say, marketing. So yeah. Because the journey that we're on at the moment is we're 85% of the way to having a complete system of products. We still have the last 15% that we're developing, and because everything we do is created from the ground up, that takes years of hard work to get the end product. For example, our coatings took 3 years to develop in total, and the result of that is, one, we can guarantee that the product is a high performer and has quality, but two, we, Roger and I, we understand the chemistry and how it was made and where it will work and where it won't work. And you don't get that if you just go to a chemical blender and they just create something for you.
Cracking, absolutely cracking. So there's, we've established like the quality from like the product side. There's also, just importantly, the application side. And you know, we all know that a tool in the wrong hands can be a weapon. With that in mind, yeah, can you talk through us your kind of partner network and what that is?
Yes. So a bit like when we looked at the chemical side, having been a detailer myself, and Roger, we knew that there was various challenges with the professional networks that were already out there. And with our corporate backgrounds, having professional training, being qualified, having experience, having the correct insurance was paramount for us, because the detailers that represent Garage Therapy, in terms of them using our products to install on customers' cars, is effectively an extension of the brand. So we want our detailers to be highly professional and qualified. And the way that we structured our professional network was that we partnered very closely with two associations. One's the International Detailers Association. Another one is a UK-based association called Professional Validators and Detailers, PVD. And to join those associations, you have to have insurance and you have to do their training and exams. And that way we can ensure that the detailers that join our network are fully qualified, have the right experience, and they value CSI, continual service improvement, in their own business, and we very much want that in terms of representation for Garage Therapy. So that makes our network unique, because all of the detailers that are part of our network are all qualified and experienced.
Yeah. I think it's worth pointing out at this stage on the Near Me tab on the NarmWorks website, and this was off a conversation, Maz, that you and I had a couple of months ago, in wanting to, show some love for what you guys do. And you said, well, it's not just us. There's a network and a community here of people that do a really good job. So we've popped all of those businesses who are your partners on the Near Me tab on the NarmWorks website. So if you'd like to, for people listening at home, if you'd like to find your nearest detailer that is a partner through Garage Therapy, then go on there and take a look. There's quite a big network, to be honest with you. There's, what's it, 15, 20?
Yeah, we've got, I think about... I should know this, shouldn't I? I think we've got about 15, yeah, 15 yeah. detailers at the moment. I mean, it's not big compared to some other networks, but we're not after just numbers. We want quality.
Yeah.
And we want the right people on the network. Because as you said earlier, Lee, you know, or your father looked at your car and he went, wow, that looks really good. Well, I want customers that go to GT professional detailers to be wowed by their professionalism and then result the car looking fantastic. So when detailers come on board, we make sure that they're providing that.
Yeah. I think again that's kind of crucial, and maybe, you know, sets what you do aside from other people without you know, without coming at it with without being facetious on it. Sometimes, I don't know, I've always historically been quite dubious of detailers. Like, I've never felt completely comfortable rocking up to a detailer. Sometimes, and again, this is where perhaps I'm being a bit facetious, I just think these places half the time are just conduits to their one's Instagram account.
I think the automotive industry, you have good independents and not so good independents. You have good mechanics and not so good mechanics, and you have good detailers and not so good detailers. I think one of the detailing industry in a sense is in the middle of its journey. It's still almost in its infancy, in the sense that it's become very popular in the last 10 years. And ultimately, to get into detailing, you can learn it yourself. You know, anyone can get a bucket and a wash mitt and clean a car. But what sets a really good detailer from a bad detailer is massive amount. Good detailers, their main goal is preservation. You know, restoration and preservation of the paint. Whereas a not so good detailer might not be thinking about preservation as much. They might give you a good end result, but if they've taken three quarters of the lacquer along with it, that's not good for you in the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years time, or for the next owner of the vehicle, because then the next detailer that works on the car hasn't got as much paint to play with.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Maz, and lends weight to the, you know, to what you're doing. You know, the barriers to entry for detailing are, you know,
quite low.
Lee and I, you know, we could set up Lee Max Detailing. You know, we could be off and running next week, and that would be horrific. So to align yourself with those professional bodies and put your own program in place, you know, creates a barrier to entry that people, you know, creates a watermark that people need to get above.
I keep saying I have obviously lots of conversations with detailers, and for us it's not an elitism thing, so in the sense that, oh, you can only join our club if you jump through these hoops. It's more ensuring that there's a minimum standard for the network and a minimum standard that will uplift the industry at the same time. So we partner with an organization called the UK Detailing Academy that has decades worth of experience in training professionals to detail cars. So our training program is actually run independently by another organization. And the reason why we've done that is to show that we're not having favoritism. So as an example, Max, I'm the owner of Garage Therapy and I want Max to be my detailer, but you're not qualified. So how do you stop brand owners or management recruiting in their mates just because they're the, you know, there has to be a process and a system in place to safeguard the customer from bad business practices as well. So, and we've taken that very seriously. Hence why we've partnered with an external training organization to deliver the training. So we can't unduly influence the process. I mean, ultimately it's our company, but you know, we do take that very seriously.
So where you're saying there are new products developed then, Maz, are you obviously you don't need to teach these professionals to suck eggs, right? But maybe you'll update them on the new product, like how it kind of usurps the previous one, because I suppose like it's good to know.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have long development cycles, and what we try and do is we will send various products to our network to test and provide feedback on. With the network being relatively small, I know the characteristics of certain detailers that are really good at, for example, applying a coating, or one detailer might wash a lot more cars than another detailer. So we will utilize the expertise within the network to test various products and feedback to us to ensure that we haven't missed anything. But we are... QA process is quite vigorous, so we're probably one of the few brands that I say few brands, but we ensure that we test our product thoroughly and we send it externally to be tested by the actual raw material manufacturer, so they've got sophisticated tests that they can do and provide us data. We have our own chemists who do synthetic testing in a laboratory, then I do our own testing at HQ and other various locations, so real world environment testing, and then detailers will test it. And in the end, you know, a product over the 2 years might be tested 300, 400, 500, 600 times, 1,000 times, however many times required to reach the end result and it be a product of quality.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned that there's like a 15% to go. Is that of products being developed or products that perhaps you're not quite happy with just yet?
A bit of both. So we have products that there's gaps in the range that we currently have that need to be filled. And there's a few areas that I'm not convinced needs filling. So we try and gear our, the whole GT system is around what we call process accelerators. So we have products that will accelerate the cleaning of your vehicle because they might be really effective or they might be versatile. And what that will do is it will cut down the number of products you need to clean a car. So we have a product called Zero Decon Shampoo that can also double up as a tire cleaner, an alloy wheel cleaner. It can be used as a snow foam, but you can use it in the bucket wash. It can be used to clean the undercarriage. There's many, many uses for it. And what that does is that enables the detailer to cut down the volume of chemicals he's using and use one chemical that's incredibly powerful that can do everything almost best in class in every single category it goes in.
You mentioned that Decon shampoo. That is a banger. That is the stuff I use. And I think like sometimes with me, like I'm quite time poor. I haven't got time to pull out the full kind of recruitment of these different bits and pieces. So that's the go-to. And I find exactly as you said, that works brilliantly on bodywork and it does a pretty good job on the wheels like as well. And I've not got to fiddle around because it's not just two products, you know, if you want to get really fancy, it's two buckets, you know, two more and everything
exactly.
else.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, funny you say that. I want to talk about your cars, your personal stuff, because it stands to reason. I think half the reason you develop these lovely products is because you have a lovely car and you don't want to put crap on it.
Yes.
So members of the collective, when they come along to my anniversary collection, I hope would have seen your 911 Turbo S. Which yes. you've had for how long now? A year?
Since October. So
okay. Coming up to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming up to. Absolutely awesome. So yeah, talk me through, like, how do you find that car first of all, and then we'll talk to how you got there.
It's something I've been thinking about a lot recently. So I can be very objective about cars, so I don't get attached to cars as much as some other people. So I can buy a car and then within a week say I don't like it, you know, and then and then crucify it. So taking the 991 in isolation, I think that the increased wheelbase, the width and length, has made a massive difference to the way that the 911s feel, especially compared to the 997, 996 generation. Yeah. And having taken the car now on track and done some lovely Welsh road driving and roads around Essex, I think that as a 911, I think that's it may be the best 911 generation ever, even compared to the 992, because it still retains that rear engine feel that's ever present in the 911, but adds that modern technology to it. I mean, for example, the rear steer is incredible in terms of turning, and the PDCC is amazing in terms of body control, and having jumped in and out of various generations of Porsches at recent track day, it's really evident that the changes they've made is phenomenal.
Yeah.
However, I think I prefer my old 997.1 turbo.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
It's and again, I've probably given this a bit too much thought, so I'm extending the length of my answer here. But
the safe space, Maz. You go for it. Go for it.
You said last week, and as Andy says, we can go as spotty as we like here.
Yeah. I think the 997. The great thing about the 997. Generation is that it does have a slightly shorter wheelbase, and the front end is not as sophisticated as a 991. Now that gives you a much more visceral effect when you're driving the car, because you've got the hydraulic steering that, you know, it's fidgeting around in your hands. You're trying to find the grip on the front end. It maybe isn't turning in as keenly as a 991. But I think that's probably the more authentic 911 package than the 991 generation. And I'm torn at the moment because I love the 991 Turbo S. But in the back of my head, I'm thinking, yeah, but am I having as much fun as I did the 997.1 Turbo? I'm not sure at the moment.
Yours was a .1, so it's the Metzger lump.
Correct, yeah. Now, the funny thing...
Manual box.
Yes. Yes.
Nice.
So the this is going to be controversial, but I actually think the 991 Turbo S engine is far superior in terms of sound. And I think it was a previous podcast you said, Max, where they made the rear of the car more of a sound box, right? And I think because of that, it makes it actually sound a lot more raw in the 991 than the 997, which is a funny thing to say, but I'm convinced that that's the case. But the great thing about the 99, the Mezger engine is power delivery. It's got the variable vane turbos, but it's still, you know, gives you that shove at 3,500-4,000 revs, and it goes really frantic to the red line, whereas the 991 I think builds a lot earlier and maintains that build up of acceleration a lot more fluidly than the 997. But again, does that equate to a more fun drive or not?
Well, this is the thing. I think you can surmise that as, and it's a sentiment that I certainly adhere to, that the 991, be it turbo or turbo S, over the 997, is far more sophisticated in every single way, in every single way. And so your, it comes down to what are you after. For some people, they want that sophistication for the Turbo or Turbo S. It's an everyday car that is also a weekend toy, really comfortable driving through Europe. It's a one car that does everything exquisitely. However, there are some people, and Maz, I think you're kind of probably in this camp where, you know, you want a bit of comfort and luxury and power, but you also want to maybe like use your brain a little bit to drive it and still have that kind of purity, I suppose, when it comes to driving experience.
It kind of reminds me. So I had a Porsche experience. I think it was 2011, and I drove a 997.2 GT3 at Silverstone, and then the second half of the experience was jumping into a 997 GT2, and the GT2 felt a lot more planted, a lot less raw. And speaking to the teacher on the day, he said, because it's that car's traveling a lot faster, you can't have that same visceral feeling as what you do in the GT3, because it would almost be too much. Now obviously things have changed a lot in the last 10 years, but that kind of reminds me a little bit of the going from the 997 Turbo to the 991 Turbo S. It's where the car's got so much more powerful and faster, and it can do everything so much better. They almost have to dumb it down because it will overload the senses a bit too much, maybe.
Yeah. Well, a bit of context, Maz, because I always think it's interesting to think about this as well. What other cars do you in your family have that you are stepping in and out of and having access to, you know, family cars or other cars, just to give us a bit of context around how you're using your 911s and what you need from them?
Yeah. I've my daily car is a Seat Leon Cupra. It's a Mark III, 300 horsepower. It's actually the state version. My wife's cars are the same car basically, but a 280 horsepower variant.
You can don't ask me how we've ended up with the same putting car. Back in, what's the word, what's this little saying? You can take the man out of Essex, but you can't take the Essex out. I'm the man. the Leon.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So it's a hot hatch, it's a powerful hot hatch, it's a great car. It's a manual, so I'll get my heel and toe fix out of it, I guess, and it being a front wheel drive hot hatch, I guess it's a different type of driving experience to a 911. I don't know, Max. I think that my previous Porsches that I had a 997.1 C4S, which had an incredible spec because it used to be a Porsche GB car. The cocoa interior, it had carbon ceramics, it had a differential, it had all the bells and whistles that you could option in a 997.1, and I'm with what you said in the previous podcast. I think that .1 generation of M97 engine was phenomenal. The sound it would make, especially from 5 to 7 grand, was that howl just disappeared when they went over to the DFI engine. Completely. So stepping from that car into a 997.1 turbo was almost a rude awakening, because I actually preferred the C4S so much so that I then decided, whilst I had the 997 turbo, was to go and buy another two 996s to try and find that same naturally aspirated feeling. So I had a 996 C4S and a 996 C2 aero kit car. But I think I'm a turbo guy now.
Sounds like you might need a 997 GT2.
kind of sounds like everything. I might need that. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the best looking 911s, I think. I think they're spectacular things.
Yeah, I agree. I think to wrap up, I guess, the 991, I love it. I'm going to continue to drive it and enjoy it and try and explore its capabilities. But part of me is thinking maybe I'll end up with a 997 again. Maybe a GT2, who knows? I don't think I could afford it though, but who knows?
Yeah. Your 991, is it the same colour as my new Boxster? Is it rhodium or is it GT?
It is. Rhodium silver.
Yes.
So it's a very well spec car. It's almost too well spec. But it's got one major flaw. It hasn't got heated seats, which is like the oddest thing ever.
Spec regret. There we go.
Yeah. So yeah, it's got GT2 RS side skirts, I think, which really give it that fat look in terms of the side profile, not three quarters profile look. It's got aluminium pedals, white dials, Porsche crests on the sport, you know, the 18-way adjustable seats. It's a really nice car, really well spec'd.
Lovely. And from a professional point of view, where are you on rhodium? Because I didn't really have an opinion on Porsche silvers, and Lee's schooled me a bit on the pros and cons of different Porsche silvers. But I'm really warming to rhodium. And since, you know, Charlie's washed it a couple of times now, and it's really responded well to a bit of TLC and to the improving weather, it's lovely.
I'm maybe saying something, some heresy here, but I'm starting to think it might be a better colour than GT silver.
Oh, I agree. You heard it in the first, folks.
I agree. I agree with that completely.
It seems to have more character than the GT silver in different lights. I think the negative with rhodium silver is if you do get a really bright day, it gets a bit too blue looking and a bit flat. You don't get the reflections as what you do in a GT silver car. So if that's the negative, but from a professional standpoint, I guess from a detailing standpoint, it's a fantastic color because it hides defects really well, which you've alluded to, Max.
Maybe it's a good color for the English weather. You know, generally we're sort of gray and not so bright. So maybe it's got that fluorescency that works in the British weather.
That's a great shout, you know.
It wouldn't work so well in a bright country such as Spain or something like that.
I think polar silver is similar because it's a bit of a kind of chameleon, really, with the way it is. And, you know, on winter days, it almost goes like very bluey, which I quite like. And then on the sun, under the sun, sun's rays, it gets that real like nice zing of silver, which really jumps up and lifts. So I find that changes quite a lot. Whether it's GT... by example, and obviously I've been staring at GT silver paintwork quite a lot the last few weeks. Generally quite flat, to be honest, by comparison, just in terms of the colour. I mean, obviously the bodywork on that is immaculate, as you know, Maz. I don't know. Yeah, not as much flair in the paint, I think, as rhodium and polar for me.
Yeah, it was a surprisingly rewarding colour to machine polish and get it to a good standard ready for PPF. In the right lights, it does look incredible. It has more depth than you think it does in the correct lighting.
Yeah.
But from a detailing standpoint, silvers, you can't go wrong with silvers because they hide defects really well.
I
want to just talk about your say it days. So you've alluded to it earlier on that you've had a couple of say it lay-ons, but you were big in the game, mate, back in the day, weren't you? I want to talk about it. Talk about it. Forum celebrity.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but I think I annoyed a few of the petrol owners back in the day, certainly.
Were you smoking it, were you?
Well, I couldn't afford to get a Cupra R, a Seat Leon Mark 1 Cupra R. I think it was a 1.8 turbo. And what I could afford was a 150 PD pump deuce diesel Leon. It was a Leon FR. And Roger done effectively done exactly the same thing. He just got a black one instead of a grey car.
It's such a decent engine, that, by the way.
It is actually a phenomenal engine, excluding the black smoke that comes out of the rear of it and the short revs. It is actually a very tunable and powerful engine. So over the course of 6 years of ownership, I must have spent £20,000-£30,000 on modifying that car.
Get a bought a Porsche for that, mate.
Well, yeah. you name it, I done it. KW variant threes, Quaife differential. I had bespoke pipe work made for it, hybrid turbo. The head was ported and polished by a British touring car team. Exhaust, custom exhaust done. Every single bush on the car was replaced to, I think, Powerflex or Super Pro. I had 034 top mounts and drop links and stuff imported from America. The list was as long as my arm in terms of modification. I think what that done in at that part of my life was actually made me learn what made cars good. Certainly from a chassis point of view, because it was never going to be as fast as a petrol 1.8, even though it was kicking out about 250 horsepower and about 400 foot-pound of torque. It was never going to be a petrol. So Roger and I, we focused purely on making it an incredible car to drive. And now, at the time, I was a customer of his, but now a good friend of mine, Sean Hollenby, who runs AMD Essex, and he also ran the British touring car team for, 10, 15 years. We tapped into his expertise in terms of setting up the cars, making sure that they drove as good as a Mark 1 Leon could drive, and the end result was pretty phenomenal for what it was, and way ahead of its time, because there was no such thing as 250 brake horsepower diesels until BMW released their 335D that came with, was it 270 or 280 horsepower, something like that?
280, I think.
So
used to really crave a Mark 1, say at Leon.
Looking car, it's a nice shape, isn't it?
Yeah,
really nice shape.
Lovely, like lovely, lovely. I remember going to Core. What show was it now? It was a
South End Seafront on a Saturday night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it might as well have been, mate. It might as well have been. But no, it was a Wagon BMW show at Turveston Aerodrome. Right. And part next to me was this awesome, Mark 1 black on black Cupra R. On airbags, it just sat on its ass in the grass, and I just kept looking at it going, that thing is absolutely beautiful. Like it was a 180 in that, I'm sure it was. Well, it would have been Cupra R, but just a good looking car, just a really good looking car out of the box. And as you know, from my mind back then, didn't take a lot to kind of get them looking just perfect, like stance and everything else.
I think, I was on sitcupra.net back in those days, but I think I had my car back in those days. You would do a full build thread, where you would literally document every single thing you'd done to that car. And in the end, my car was the most viewed car on the whole forum, above all the petrols. And I don't think they appreciated that, but.
Where's the car now?
Oh, I don't know. It's probably crashed in a hedge somewhere in Essex. I don't know. Yes, who knows?
There comes a point, as you said, you chuck a load of money into a project. Whether you personally have got over the fact or not that it's not a Cupra R, there comes a point when you've had your fun with it, and whether it was that reason or you just, like Andy said, we might as well go and buy a Porsche for this sort of money.
That's exactly what happened. So, what that car did for me was it got all of the modifying bug out of my system. And I then thought, well, there's no point me just buying a car and spending 10, 15, 20,000 pounds to change it into something that it never was to begin with. And you know, as good as fun as it is modifying hot hatches and making them go fast, at the end of the day, they're built to be family cars, and yeah, they're made into a hot hatch from a, you know, a base that wasn't designed to be a sports car. And, you know, after I had the car for 6 years, you know, the next logical progression was to go into a Porsche. I mean, as you know, my uncle, who's also part of the Nürburgring patrons, you know, when I was a young lad, I used to look out the window and I used to see, you know, his 964, you know, sat on the driveway, you know, and then that, then when he used to change and get another Porsche, he used to just sit there longing for a Porsche, you know, since the indoctrinator started when I was young, right? So as soon as I could afford to get out of the Leon, that was it. I never looked back.
Yeah. And so was that straight into a 911 from that point?
No, it was, I had a bit of, close your ears, Max. I had a bit of a lunacy and I got a BMW. It got stolen. No.
What sort of Beamer?
It was a 335D. So I kept into the diesel realm. E90, 335.
Okay, yeah.
Definitely leads you into your turbo stuff, doesn't it? You desire the lag. Definitely. That's what you like.
And the power.
Yeah.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, I think with coming from a diesel, having that torque on tap, you're right, it does lend itself well to going into turbo powered Porsches. You're right, Andy. So I got the BMW 335D. It got stolen after 3 months. I then went into an Audi S4 for about 18 months, and then I did my Silverstone track day with the GT3 and the GT2, and I've never bought another brand of car since, I guess.
That's amazing, isn't it? What an expensive day that turned out to be. fantastic. Well, yeah, look, as I said, you know, I think that it makes the products that you create, you know, you're using them on a car that's clearly, like, you know, holds a lot of sway with you emotionally. And it's a nice car, you know, if everybody likes a Porsche. If they don't own one, they aspire to own one. So, you know, there's reason enough, really, for your cars to be looking better than most, I'd say, and for you to kind of hammer home that kind of product or quality of product.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, one thing that resonates with what you say to me, Lee, you know, in terms of you didn't like cleaning your cars and now you're slowly changing you into enjoying more, you know, keeping the car clean, is for me, there's nothing better than driving the car, using it as they're intended, but then when you come home and you get time to wash the car, then just almost refreshing it ready for the next adventure. And that's, I think, for me, why I love detailing, because when I came home from the track day at Landau, you know, there's nothing better than spending a good day checking over the car, cleaning it, inspecting it for any damage or stone chips or whatever is picked up, and bringing it back to its best ready for the next adventure.
Yeah, that's cracking. And I love how you put that, like, reset ready for its next adventure. I think like a perfect example of, like, maybe the change to my mindset is after the 25 years of 996 Nürburgring road trip last year to the Porsche Museum. Obviously, that was end of September. The next time I cleaned my car was January. So it was a good 3 months after I'd been to Germany and back. It was, you know, I thought, hey, it'll clean itself after a while, won't it? And, you know, that was all cool. Weather's obviously, having recently got back from Norway, at the time of recording this, it certainly won't be by the time it's published, but the car still has a thin veneer of Norway all over it. And I cannot wait to get that cleaned. And because it's kind of bothering me that it's sitting there. I like the used look and the driven not hidden, etc. But, you know, I just know that when that car is clean, it looks amazing. If it makes old buggers like my dad go, that's a really nice car, then I'm on to a winner, you know. So yes, okay, look, Maz, we'd love for you to come back on another time and maybe do like a detailing 101, and maybe we'll invite some questions from the collective and everybody else. Yes. and really kind of showcase your expertise, because you are definitely the man with the knowledge. Definitely.
Thank you.
But perhaps kind of before we do that, it would be good to just off the bat, maybe for you to disclose what's like the most common mistake that people make when cleaning and or detailing their car.
Using a chamois to dry it.
Right, yeah.
Don't use chamois. Because I'll explain very, very quickly without boring everyone to death, but chamois are leather, right? And they don't have any pile to them. So any dirt that potentially is on the surface, you're just dragging it around the surface.
How about those blade things?
Don't use blades.
I used to use one.
Yeah, if you like long straight scratches on the car, then yes, yeah, use a blade, but certainly don't use any blades on the car.
Okay, Grant, and I suppose like really like in terms of like some quick wins, really the less you can touch the car the better. That's the key, isn't it? The less you can personally touch that car.
You want to, yes, correct, you want to keep the car clean. However, every time you touch the car, you're potentially inflicting damage. So the less you touch it, the less you're minimizing the potential of damage. So you want
putting on contaminants.
Yes. Well, no, and yes, but we can go into that in another episode, I guess. But you want a good process. You want to touch your car as little as possible, but to still come out with the desired result, which is a clean car. What we call in detailing is love marks. There's a lot of love marks on people's cars where they wipe and wipe and wipe and buff and buff and buff. And all you end up doing is just creating lots of scratches and lots of swirl marks.
Yeah. Okay. And when and where is the best time and place to clean your car?
Early morning or late afternoon when the sun goes down. Or if you're you've got a good setup and you've got shade, then you can wash at any time of the day, really. I mean, the one of the biggest enemies for when you wash your car is the total dissolved solids in the water. So if that water dries on the car, then the minerals in the water will then leave water spots, and that will etch into the clear coat of the paint. And then you're in big trouble, especially if it's a hot day.
Wow. Yeah.
Just a quick question for me, following on from the previous question about touching the car little or as much as is necessary. Do I need to invest in a jet washer?
I would start with a bucket first, Max, because
bucket first.
You're not going to get very far without having a bucket of water.
I saw a brilliant video the other day. There was a guy and his wife washing their BMW 3 Series. I think it was him and his wife. He had a hose and she had a jug, like a Pyrex jug and a sponge. I reckon that's Max's level currently.
So, yeah absolutely. You want me. It's a good question, though, Max, in all seriousness. You want a good, you want a pressure washer, water pressure used correctly. So, obviously, you've got to be responsible with high pressure water. It can be very effective at getting dirt off the car before you make contact with the vehicle. So in detailing, we have something called a pre-wash, which is your snow foams or your citrus-based pre-wash products that you want to apply to the vehicle, let it soften the dirt, then you pressure wash it off. And you get as much of that dirt off as possible before you make contact with the paint, and that will minimize the damage that you will then inflict while washing the car. I mean, the goal obviously is to inflict no damage, but again, that's probably for another episode.
Yeah. So another follow-on question then. With bird poos, is it sensible to use from other detailing manufacturers bird poo wipes that look like baby wipes? Is that a good idea? Is it? I guess it's good to get the bird poo off.
Yes. As with anything in life, there's always trade-offs. So I would say you're probably better getting the bird poo off if it's a very hot day, because one of the dangers of leaving burp on the vehicle, the fact that it's very acidic and it can etch the clear coat, is the heat. So the heat will effectively soften the lacquer and make it more susceptible to etching, and accelerate that drying process with the bird poo. So I'm not a big fan of the wipes because the tissue in itself is quite abrasive, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lesser evil in balance. It might be a good episode for us to cover with Lee in terms of how to handle cleaning off bird poo off a vehicle.
Yeah, I think so.
Just go and park under a tree and for half an hour. Oh dear, can we use Andy's car for that one?
No.
I'll tell you what would be a good laugh, actually. It's like the three of us, we come to yours, Maz, and we line up our three cars outside Garage Therapy, and then like you blow the whistle or like honk the horn, whatever it is, and then we start cleaning the cars, and it's a bit like Bake Off. So you're standing there marking it, and like you get to come up to us and go, Lee, just, you know, talk us through what you're doing here. And we go, I've no fucking idea. It's like half an hour of mild panic, and then afterwards you tell us where we went wrong and how to fix it. I think that'd be quite good fun.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, happy to do that.
Then, Maz, last question for me is this the first time you've been compared to Mary Berry? Or has that happened before?
Yes.
Won't be the last.
Yeah. Wicked, Maz, it was quality to have you on, mate. And as I say, you've got such like a broad and detailed knowledge of this entire world, and just picking up a few bits and pieces from you over the past few months has really benefited me and how I look after my car, which is ultimately part of my Porsche lifestyle. So hopefully through the videos on Nineworks TV, and when we get you back on the podcast for some detailing 101, you can impart some of that knowledge on the audience as well. It's worth pointing out the website, Maz, where your products are, which is
www.garagetherapy.co.uk.
Amazing. I know you sell into B2B, but there is also a B2C element there. So definitely, if you're listening, go and check it out. There is a discount code for Nineworks members, but we're going to save that for the collective.
Yeah.
Because that's how we roll. So we'll pop that on the group. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. And Maz, it goes without saying, we're super grateful for your time, good sir.
No, I had a great time. Thank you very much for having me on. And I look forward to talking to you guys soon.
Yeah, it's good to hear the backstory, and I look forward to hearing all the details and how we can improve our cleaning processes in the future. It's good.
Well, Maz and I have been talking about doing a little collective get-together at Garage.
Yes, State. I've got to give you dates, don't I? Sorry.
No, all good. Yeah, no, I know you're busy, but that'd be really cool to come along and maybe, you could show us a little bit of insight into a section of car detailing.
That'd be fascinating.
Yeah. And it's an excuse for a get-together, isn't it? Which is always a jolly good experience. Fun. So, yeah. Excellent. Maz from Garage Therapy, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah. Nice to hear about the GT story. Everyone's got so many different points to entry in the industry. And again, like Maz is adhering to that thing that we've discovered in the past, that people come to Porsche often via the VAG group.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of another way in. And I think Andy, like, well pointed out there with, you know, Mez's penchant for power, if you like, or turbocharged power, forced induction has led him into turbos. I've actually realized as well quite recently in chatting to a couple of people, so there was Rob on the Wales road trip, Andy, who obviously you met. Lovely chap called Mark, who came to Norway and had a Turbo S cab. I've had others along the way that I can't recall currently, but I seem to be picking up a bit of a pattern that those who have motorbikes, like superbikes, or have had superbikes, they tend to be Turbo S owners, which, I mean, is obvious when you kind of think about it, but like, obviously they all say, look, nothing comes close to the thrill of a superbike, nothing. Yeah. But, you know, if I like Porsches, and that car kind of hits the spot for me in terms of just like outright pace and everything else. So definitely notice a bit of a pattern there. A
few brain cells missing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. The bikers bikers are the ones that tend to go for the Turbo S's. It kind of satisfies their needs.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Shall we spread some love and do a marketplace car of the week?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Amazing. There have been some amazing cars go up on the marketplace this week, by the way. I don't know if you gents have seen, but...
I'll have a quick look.
Well...
Yeah. There's been some proper awesome stuff go up.
There is.
Hit us with it.
I think there's one standout car that has to be the gem of the week for this week. It's a bit of a coup to have something like this on the marketplace, where it's testament to the success of what's building with the marketplace, that we can go from last week's
Macan.
I think there's a lovely Macan GTS up at Lakeside, up at Henry's, to the bottom of the country at Paragon with the 356 Speedster. Ooh. That Paragon have got. You know, what a car.
Beautiful.
What a car to have on the marketplace. I mean, what a car for any Porsche specialist to have in stock. I know it's a bit of not quite a stock in trade, but, you know, Mark's into that sort of thing, and Paragon have that kind of stock. But what a thing. What a special car.
Isn't that just the most beautiful piece of Porsche that I think you can hope to have? Like, I really do. I was lucky enough down at Paragon recently. I was having a good look around that in the flesh. And it is, honestly, it's so beautiful, that thing. You could pop it in the middle of your house and just look at it. I think it's a piece of art as much as it is a car. Like, I really believe that. And I think not only is it kind of Porsche Speedster Genesis, I actually think that's where the Speedster story stopped for Porsche. I've never, as you know, liked a 911 Speedster. I always think the concept just doesn't work for me. So that's peak Speedster for me. It's a thing of utter beauty.
Yeah, it's a lovely looking thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really lovely. You know, even if you're not in the market, I mean, and I'm not in the market for anything, but I'm always looking. You've got to get online and have a look at this thing.
Yeah.
It's bloody lovely. A 1957 car. It's red. It's just stunning.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning.
Yeah, peak Speedster, nice. And you know, you buy that, you're buying a slice of a pretty exclusive club. There's some really cool people around the world that own 356 Speedsters, without name dropping, but give it a little Google. Yeah, there's some interesting owners out there, so you'd be part of that little club, I'd say. That'd be a WhatsApp group and a half. Ooh.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So there we go. So that's the marketplace gem of the week for this week.
Amazing. Nice. Yeah, it's a great show, Max. And yeah, it's a real, real coup and honor to have that on the marketplace this week. I'd noticed the CSR Evo was on there as well. That's reserved already. My God, what a car that is.
You've driven that, haven't you?
I have driven it. There's a pretty good YouTube video we did a couple of years back. We took it from central London to Snowdonia, just showing the all-round usability of that car. But I said on that video, and I, to be honest with you, however many years on, I still agree with that opinion I gave at the time. I'd rather have that car than a 996 GT3. In terms of pure drivability, park the investment piece, and, you know, for carpe diem and live once and all that, I'd have that in a heartbeat. I really would.
Cool-looking thing. Really lovely build. Lovely build.
Really cool. Really cool. Just like, yeah, I mean, if it was me and I, you know, being picky, because it's purple, it's an Audi color. It's Merlin purple that the guys finished the car in. I would change that. I'm not the biggest fan of it. But
I think that's beautiful.
Really, see, it doesn't do it for me in the slightest. But actually, obviously, I know I've done this Gundo hack to my car. But, you know, when the time comes when that perishes, you know, I do keep looking at that CSR center exit exhaust and the wallet is twitching.
Excellent.
The thing of beauty. It's a thing of beauty.
Yeah, that's a lovely. I mean, that was in the pot for gem of the week, but I noticed that it very quickly gone to reserved.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll move on to the Speedster. But yeah, that's a cool car.
It is. Nice. It is. There's a happy new owner out there somewhere. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Congrats to whoever that is. Great shout, Max. Who are we spreading some love to this week then, gents?
I've got one. I'm going to spread the love to a past interviewee of the podcast. And that's Built From Basil Gear Knobs. He's done me a cracker, absolute cracker for the SC, which I'm sure you've probably all seen already. But yeah, I'd really recommend a bit of Built By Basil.
Yeah, I saw it on the works chat. on what's happened the week for the collective. Looked awesome, mate. So yeah, cheers for sharing that. That's yeah, amazing attention to detail that would appeal to you in particular. I know that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Looking forward to telling the story of it.
Oh, yeah, very good. Very good. Is it on?
Not quite yet. No, I'm going to have to see him on Wednesday night, I think, to go and pick it up.
Yeah, mate, yeah. He's only down the road, isn't he? Through
yes.
The forest.
So. Lymington Way, yeah. Or yeah, Lyndhurst yeah. Way. Yeah.
Very good. Is he fitting it as well? Is it somewhere. Part of the service? Or are you
it good? Is indeed, yeah.
He's going to fit it really? Knob. Yeah. Wicked. Ha, ha, ha. Oy, oy. Cracking. All right. Well, I won't come with for that. I'll leave you to it.
Yep. Thank you.
But cracking. Max, what's your spread the love, my friend?
I've got a very special spread the love. I'm spreading some podcast love today. Real special one. Talking of things from the past, I've mentioned in the past Chasing the Racing, which is a motorbike racing podcast. I talked about that after Chrissy Rouse, who started that and was one of the co-presenters after he died. But Dom Herbertson, who's the other presenter, who's a lumberjack and motorbike racer, he's at the TT at the moment because it's Isle of Man TT. I talked about that on Spread the Love the other day. In the superbike race yesterday, he joined the exclusive group of people who've done 130 mile an hour average speed lap of the TT. So Dom, that must make Dom the fastest podcaster in the world. What a bloody legend. He finished 8th overall in the Superbike TT on Sunday. And yeah, a 130 lap. I mean, what a hero Dom is. Bloody legend. Yeah. So some podcast love for Chasing the Racing and Dom Herbertson. Well done, son.
Well done, Max. Very, very good. Excellent. Very good. I'm going to keep it Porsche for Spread the Love this week, as I usually do, to be fair. But I am going to go for Johan Dirks. I want to do a big shout out to Johan. So Johan runs 911 Motorsport in Antwerp. But if you've read Christophorus, Porsche magazine, or seen the Porsche newsroom website of late, or followed Porsche on social media, they did a really cool article where they had a look around Johan's collection. He's got an unbelievable collection, every RS, every RSR, a 1967 911R. I mean, go find them. Load of really cool one-off paint sample cars, et cetera, et cetera. Johan uses these cars. They don't just sit in a collection gathering dust, okay? He drives them and he drives a lot of them sideways. I've done some interviews and videos with some of his cars in the past on Gnomeworks TV, so go and check it out. And actually the old intro to my YouTube videos had a paint sample Riviera Blue 997 RS 4 litre going sideways around a track. And that was him. Brilliant bloke. But as I say, he runs 911 Motorsport alongside his collection, which is looking after friends' cars, really. But Johan is a top guy. So on the Norway road trip, we were kind of coming back through Europe and realized we needed a stopover in Belgium. And I dropped him a line, called him up and said, Johan, don't suppose a few friends and I can stop by your garage and maybe we just show them around your car collection, if that's okay. And what a legend. He said, no problem at all. What time are you going to be here? Actually, we had a little bit of traffic around Belgium. Belgium's quite congested. We actually missed his working day, but Johan, the legend, he stayed behind after work to welcome us and just show us around his collection before we headed off back to the Eurotunnel at Calais. So what a bloke, As a small thanks, I gave him one of our leather, driven not hidden key rings, only available to the collective. And he's now got it on his, one of one 992 Turbo S, which again is all like exclusive built to match his 1975 933 liter, which is the same colorway, interior and everything else. So he's got that on his keys, which is fantastic. But just big thanks to Johan, really top guy.
Yeah, good man. I've seen pictures and things from here, from the stuff that you've done with him, Lee, on YouTube and in the mag. What a collection, as you say, every RS, every RSR. You just don't get to see that sort of thing.
No, not at all. And this is what I mean, you know, there's one thing owning a 964 3.8 RSR, is another thing using it as well. And you know, and he takes them to track days and that. We've done a good few bits and pieces together. So he's a real ambassador for what these kind of Porsche sports cars are all about, really. You know, lots of people, Porsche, you know, itself, they kind of pinch some of his cars sometimes for display. when the 2017 911R came out, there was all the marketing posters was when they had the new car alongside the original. That original was Johan's car. Porsche's just bought Johan's 911 ST fairly recently, and now that ST is going to be in all the marketing, we can pretty much assume, when the new car drops.
Okay,
real kind of preserver of Porsche history there in the greatest tradition. So yeah, top guy. So that's it's a big spread the love really for Johan. Cheers, mate.
Nice
one.
Cool, good. Man. Nice one, gents. Yeah, that's always a pleasure to catch up with you guys.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Good to see you back. Good to have you back in one piece.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. We'll see you soon on I'm Wet Radio. We've got more great guests and more great content coming up. You can be sure of that. So we hope to catch you when the podcast drop.
All right.
Goodbye.
This episode was brought to you by our very kind Driven Not Hidden collective. If you would like to join the collective to get further access and rewards within the NineWorks community, you can do so at patreon.com/NineWorks. You can also support us by leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app.